America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting episode of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Saloci. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Yo.
All right. So, this episode is going to be for May 10th, 2019. And this week, we had a bunch of old white guys deciding that they knew what women should do with their bodies.
So that's every week?
It's
yeah.
True.
Yeah, but this week they were especially brazen.
Well, one of them had comeuppance, too.
Oh, yeah. Also this week, Ben Shapiro got absolutely destroyed with logic and facts.
By a guy who says is on the left.
He's not, by the way. He's actually the guy who is interviewing him is a famous British conservative. But
they have different terms. Like, political terms are different.
In the U.S., he would be
centrist,
a leftist Democrat.
Well, he'd be a moderate corporate Democrat, let's be honest. He's a Tory, so.
Yeah.
He'd be kind of like the Tories up in Canada, which are, but even though Canadians also have their douchebag evangelical assholes.
Yeah.
But anyway, so amongst that, we found out that a couple of army soldiers killed an Iraqi bombing suspect.
7 years ago, though.
Yeah, it happened years ago, but we're just finding out about it now.
That's a hell of a cover-up.
There was a cover-up. He was sent to prison for it.
Yeah.
But it was just something happened.
Yeah. Australia accidentally printed, like, millions of their new $50 bill with a typo on it. So
it's a collector's
item. Need editors.
Yeah, collector's item.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's their $50 bill. Which reminds me, have you ever noticed how much more colorful everybody else's money is?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. How about you, Phil?
Yeah.
How's your money up here?
Well, our money's made of plastic, so
ours is made of cotton and paper.
Well, it's cotton polyfiber.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried to tear a Canadian bill? It's not easy anymore.
You basically have to use a pair of scissors, and even then,
yeah,
it might have to resort to a blowtorch.
You think about the stories of like parents find their kids ripping up their money. Like you think maybe they would find a more durable.
See, one of the things is there's actually one company that has the monopoly on making United States printed money. Right? Well, makes the material for it. So. And of course we got a bunch of movie stuff, including a teaser trailer for HBO's Watchmen series, and ooh boy, I can't wait to talk about that one.
Ooh.
But as always, before we get into all of that, we always must start with what we have been doing this week. So, Bill, what have you been up to this week?
So I hate allergies. I have them.
Right, and they're with you.
Yeah. So that's been going great, and by great I mean living misery.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's been fun. Apart from that, I finished off Crusade by Daniel M. Ford. That was a good series. I enjoyed that quite a bit. So yeah. Did that, and then after that I decided to start on Daniel Suarez's new novel Delta V.
Oh boy,
yeah, it's good so far. It's about asteroid mining,
and how it's going to be absolutely fucking terrifying, because that's how all Daniel Suarez's books are.
I haven't gotten to the terrifying part yet, so I don't know. I'm like about a third of the way through, and the shit hasn't hit the fan yet, but I know it's coming because that's what Daniel Suarez does. So yeah, I'm waiting for stuff to go wrong because inevitably it's going to, but they've set up a nice cast there. There's a bunch of likable characters. Even the asshole billionaire who set this whole thing in motion is kind of likable because I can kind of get behind his motives. It's basically a story of yeah, you guys are really content to just sit there and make little baby steps where I'm going to just put everything on the fucking line and go for it. And that's kind of what he does. So yeah, it's great novel so far. It's a little bit different than what he's done previously. Like he does the speculative stuff quite well. Some people didn't like Influx. I kind of did. I was kind of half-half on that one. Change Agent I thought was really good. And this one kind of follows along that line and just kind of takes a concept and just expands it out to where it's probably naturally going to go. And I feel like the science and the technology that he's got in there is very believable. So, yeah, it's he's still one of my favorite authors. So, yeah. I'm enjoying that. And apart from that, well, I've been doing my Doom stuff, still working on that. And, of course, been watching some of Patrick's streams and when I'm awake when he gets on there. So, yeah. So that's kind of been it for me. What about you?
Well, I'm finally getting ready to release my first couple Final Fantasy XIV videos after what sort of amounted to a false start last week. I just couldn't quite get all the content together. But hopefully I'll be putting those together this weekend and at least getting one of them up, if not two, and just see what kind of response it gets. Other than that, the new Bad Religion came out, Age of Unreason, and it is a fantastic album. It has a lot of the same qualities as Metallica had with Hardwired, in that you get a little slice of every era with this album, and that can be really interesting with Bad Religion, because it just covers such a broad range, and there are tracks on there that you could outright tie to specific albums, like, oh, this one sounds like The Process of Belief, this one sounds like, you know, New Maps of Hell, you know, things like that. And
what was the concept album that they put out that apparently fell flat on its ass?
Oh, I don't know if it was a concept album or not. It was just a prog rock experiment. It was called Into the Unknown.
Ah, okay.
There are some good tunes on it, and they've even started playing some of them live lately. So I think the process of starting to own that album is in motion.
Actually, wasn't this like their second album?
Yeah, it was.
This was way
it was
back,
the second full
back in
album.
83.
Yep.
Wow, that's
the only full album that they had done before that was How Could Hell Be Any Worse?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then
that's a hell of a switch.
Yeah, and then they emerged from that and did Suffer.
Ah,
that's a good recovery.
yeah. So, I will say that there aren't any Into the Unknown type of tracks on there, but yeah, give it a listen, because this is one of those bands that you just know can put out a perfect album for the times that we live in.
Hmm. And, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it delivers on that for sure.
Hmm. All right.
Pick it up.
And then other than that, I've basically just been living in VR because, my God, the PlayStation VR is addictive.
Oh, wow.
So I just love the feeling of being able to, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of day I've had or whatever. I just get home, I put the headset on, and I'm driving around just perfect road, miles and miles of perfect road on an overcast Japanese morning.
Oh, nice.
And I could just lose myself in that for hours.
Yep.
And so that's how I've been spending a good deal of my time. And then I have been partaking of some less relaxing VR experiences as well, most notably Wipeout Omega Collection and Polybius. So I'm definitely getting a good blend of activities going on there, but honestly, just free driving in Gran Turismo Sport is worth the price of admission and then some by itself.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to when you get Dirt Rally VR.
Yeah, if that price point that we were discussing last night is any indication, it won't be anytime soon. But
yeah, although I should point out that Codemaster stuff tends to go out on sale pretty often.
That is true.
And that price was with all of the Season 1 DLC, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll have to take a look at the PlayStation Store again here sometime.
Yeah. And I think the current sale is Ubisoft.
Yep.
Which just has Star Trek as their one sale thing for VR.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, that's been my week.
All right, Teresa?
I have been watching some stuff just because I needed some downtime. I absolutely blew through The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And yeah, it was good. I felt like the ending was very rushed. I'm like, hey, what? You know, I was like 15 minutes in, I'm like, what is really this is the wrap up here? So it just seemed a little, I don't know, a little unusual. But I've been watching My Hero Academia.
Which, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's long overdue to watch.
Good.
It is. Yeah. It totally is.
There's a reason why it's like become one of their top Shonen Jump's top series now.
Yeah. Yep.
It's that damn good.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's got a lot in it. Oh my God. The last night we saw the scene where, what's his face got his scar on, his, flame side of his body, on his left side, on his face.
Yeah.
And I'm like, your fucking mom did that. Oh mm-hmm. my God. That was pretty deep. But you know, that's why we watch anime. So we could have that.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, right? So,
You probably know why I went ahead and set my chat avatar at work to Shota Aizawa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could see that. Yeah.
My coworkers who know said that was probably the most appropriate thing ever.
Yeah, we're definitely enjoying that. I think that we've got quite a bit more to watch, too. I've been playing Final Fantasy XIV in little bits and pieces where I could grab it. And
working your way toward the first Stormblood.
I am in Stormblood, yep. I'm in Stormblood, and I did get the Regalia, by the way.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Well, I would hope so after the message you sent me earlier about...
I had 228. I had 228,000 MGP before that.
Oh, well, yeah.
Addicted to Cacti Pot. Or Cacpot. Yeah. Yeah, I actually did really good in this week's fashion forecast. So even though the body piece that I really needed for it, I can't get because I had not... gotten to the point where I can go there. So I still got 84 points and got 60,000 MGP today, which was nice.
See, I don't even try on that. I just show up and get my 10,000 MGP every week.
Costs a lot of money to try, honest to God. So yeah, I am in Stormblood now, so I'm getting there, guys. there. And I've been playing Pokemon Go. There is a special Detective Pikachu event going on right now. And I went out, it was yesterday, I went out and raided in the morning with some other people. And allergies, oh my God. Like the whole time I was outside and we were hitting those gyms, my eyes were streaming. Came home, completely fine.
Well, when you're ready for me to tank Siren Song C for you, let me know.
Will do. Will do. But yeah, just random... weird stuff with allergies. I woke up the day before and had fluid in my ears and was dizzy. And I'm like, come on, seriously? Seriously?
See, that doesn't happen in Eorzea.
No, it doesn't. And your kid doesn't get sick in Eorzea either. But yeah, these things do happen in real life. And your washing machine gets demonically possessed and breaks down 2 weeks after you move in as well.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that thing. Yeah. You need to put it on a dolly and move it on out.
It sounded like a belt issue to me.
Nope. It was making an electrical connection when the fucker wasn't turned on.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need an old priest and a young priest.
Yeah. I need a lot of things. But apparently I bought and brought into this place the largest casting couch you ever have seen.
It's true.
You know what? I like black leather couches. I'm not going to apologize. That has been my week.
Did you shine a black light on
Chris?
No.
Yeah, I you don't want to know what you're going to find out.
Nope.
Yeah. All right, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I have caught up on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. The episode they had this past week was really great. So I guess at some point they tried to do the Halloween episode, like the theft thing they try to do, try to figure out who's the best at stealing stuff, and put it on, postponed it, ended up doing it on Cinco de Mayo. And that whole episode's pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
The way it plays out. And yeah, so once I caught up to that, I was looking for something new to watch, and I moved over to Community, which I've seen the first couple seasons of it. So I'm just kind of trying to finish the whole thing. And it's great as I remembered it. One weird thing I noticed that I did not notice before is that John Oliver is the British friend of Jeff. I was like, that guy seems familiar. This is like 2011, 2012 John Oliver. So he looks very different than he did on Last Week Tonight. And I was like, holy shit, this is him. He's just like a lecherous drunk all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, that's pretty good for the few times he shows up. Ken Jeong is also pretty great. Yeah, that show's great. It's also a great like time vault of like what like pop culture was, you know, almost 10 years ago at that point. Because I think I'm in the Day of the Dead episode, and Abed is doing Christian Bale Batman voice. There's like, oh shit, that was the thing that people did when they talked about Batman. But yeah, that show's great. I was looking at some of their anime stuff. And I saw the original Dragon Ball. Also saw Dragon Ball GT. I was like, that's weird. Did not have like Z or Super or any of that stuff. I guess it must just be on Funimation's streaming stuff proper. But yeah, I was looking at like My Hero Academia or one of the other shows like that that I haven't seen yet. But I'll have to check back on that later. As for games, been doing a bit of streaming this week. On Tuesday, we played Shakedown Hawaii, which is the new game from Brian Provinciano of Retro City Rampage fame. And it's a game that's kind of very much in line with what that game did. It's kind of more of a 16-bit kind of style to it. This time around, and as you might be able to tell, it's set in Hawaii, set on an island. I don't know if they specifically name which island it is, but you're kind of on this island, and you are playing a guy who was like a big businessman in the 80s, wrote a big book and all that sort of stuff, and sort of wakes up in modern society, like realizing that his business is like about to crumble.
So it's Donald Trump.
I guess, but this guy actually does things. It's a lot of it illegal, but it's very much played off as a comedy of this guy kind of finding all of these nebulous businesses to try to invest in and to kind of bring his company's wealth back up to where he thinks it should be. And I'm talking about stuff like VR arcades, then tries to switch to AR. I guess he invests in a subprime auto loan dealership. Let's see, there was he owns a Coca-Cola company called Kaupe-Cola, Kaupe.
Mm-hmm.
Tries to change their whole inventory over to Gamer Cola, sort of thing, which fails because they try to do like a fake gamer ad. And the guy who is the supposed gamer is not a gamer. He pulls him from the subprime auto business, which is a weird whole mini game they have there where you're kind of pushing left and right to have him say, like, whoa, dude, all these sort of things. It keeps track of how many times you do it. You know, hitting buttons for, like, him to hit buttons on the controller that sort of stuff. But then he goes to try to drink it and spits it out because it tastes nasty. And then they find out, oh, somebody taped this whole thing and put it up as like a, you know, Coca-Cola exposed, putting fake gamer on their commercial thing, all that.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's lots of funny stuff there. You also play as his son, who also is an 80s stereotype, trying to exist now. So he has like the like cone mohawk kind of thing.
Oh.
If you want to talk about that kind of thing. His name is Scooter, which is like a perfect name of something probably came out of the 80s. And he's like a live-at-home kid who gets roped into doing these crimes with him. Like shakedowns is obviously in the name, so you go to businesses and shake them down to get protection money out of them, which then you can also buy stuff, buy the businesses. And so there's like a whole kind of a Saints Row aspect to it where you're kind of going through and like trying to buy up all the businesses. And that builds up your like daily money you bring in, which then you can spend on buying more stuff. You can buy multipliers for the different businesses, stuff like adding gift cards and some other shit like that to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a game that's just kind of taking down like shitty businesses, styles of businesses and all that sort of stuff. And there's just a lot of weird stuff to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like the VR arcade you go to is for like these little arcade challenges, kind of like you remember like the GTA challenges where just have you like, here's a weapon, kill as many people as you can with it.
Yeah.
Like 30 seconds, like that sort of stuff it has in there. Yeah, it's like, if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's kind of like the original two GTAs, GTA 1 and 2. Kind of top down. Yeah. So you're driving vehicles around, all that sort of stuff, running over people, cops chasing you, which usually I just go to a new mission because then it erases all that. It has just a ton of content in there. Like, I think the count was 111 story missions, which missions take a couple minutes to do, so it's not as long as it sounds. But yeah, that's a really cool game. It's out on, what, PS4, Vita, with crossplay there, Switch, and PC. I don't think it's going to come to Xbox because I don't think Brian Provenciano likes Microsoft too much because they screwed him around with his original game, Retro City Rampage. I think it was one of those games where he tried to get it on another platform and they just dicked him around on Xbox 360 with that, which was very much a thing that Microsoft did back then with indies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the rule.
Yeah, like you had, like you tried to get him self-published, which meant Microsoft published it. And so I think it released either like early or later than it was supposed to, like within a couple days, that sort of thing. And they screwed around with this money and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a bad system for indies. Despite all the great games that came out of it, forcing people to have to sign up with publishers to lose a chunk of their money,
mm-hmm.
Just to get on the platform. It's not a great system. On Thursday, with a sale on a bunch of the SteamWorld stuff on the Switch, I played SteamWorld Quest 2, which was a lot of fun to do. Which ended up leading me to be kind of like, I wish they did a better job like telling you exactly where you needed to go for whatever like current objective you have. And I found out there's an option hidden in the menus, in like the mod menus, for doing that thing like an hour into the stream. So I felt like an idiot for not having tracked this down earlier. Because it was like I had to go destroy these specific machines in three parts of the map. And I was like, well, it's East Temple, West Temple, and this other area I had not heard of. And it doesn't do a great job of like telling you like what the different areas are. You kind of look at the different teleport points you can go to. And those kind of give you a hint. So I knew like there's a temple on the right side of the map, temple on the left side of the map. So I think those two are self-explanatory. But where they were there was the big question. So I managed to figure that out. But yeah, that game's great. Anybody that likes, you know, Metroid-style games, that's one that does a lot of cool stuff. And, yeah. I've also been playing some Rocket League, checking out the new week's worth of quests in there. And, yeah, that has been a really successful way to get me back into the game and playing it regularly. Because I'm at like level 35 on the Rocket Pass, which is a lot further than I've gotten before. I think I got to 25 is the max I've gotten. And I'm only on week 4 of 14. So I still got a ways to go before I even max out what's in here. And yeah, they do a good job of giving you good objectives to get you trying new stuff. I think some of the goals they have for this week is, you know, do some duels, like 3 matches of competitive duel, which I've never done before. I've always done 3v3 or 4v4. Duels are the one-on-ones. There's like, you know, win a couple matches of drop shot, which means more people are playing drop shot for a little bit, which is great because that is a great mode. That's what I was playing as we were getting ready to start the show. I'm running into people with weird ass names, stuff that has asterisks in it because they're using some sort of curse word, which was it was like left word. I can specifically look up the name in the former players. Recent players. Mr. Leftward Sloping ... Which you guys said was probably penis.
Perfectly normal, sense. Perfectly healthy.
Yeah, yep. You can always tell those people are from Steam. Because they all have the weird names like that. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun still. And I also got something coming in the mail for tomorrow. It's a new micro SD card for my Switch. Much bigger nice. Storage, 400 gigs for $70. I was looking at one, it was 256 for 45, and I did the math, and it's a little bit better to go for the 400 gig one. And that'll be nice, because then I'll put the old Switch card into my phone, and I'll actually have storage for once on that thing. So I can have more than, like, you know, some podcasts, a book, a couple albums, and like 3 games. That's it. That's all I can fit on there. It's like not much. Now I can just start downloading stuff, not having to worry about deleting stuff to get above the 500 meg limit on Android before it just, 'cause once you get under 500 megs, it starts restricting what you can do as far as like internet stuff. In a way that it means just like you're not auto updating your emails. You're not getting, you know, push notifications from apps, stuff like that, that are internet related, which is a weird thing to have, but I sort of get it when it's trying to pull down data for that stuff. But yeah.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Yeah. So it's a lot of times like, oh, I gotta listen to this podcast, it'll get me above 500 sort of stuff, which whatever, that's fine anyway. But yeah, that'll be nice to have not only bunch more storage on the Switch, but also having more storage on my phone. And that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, pretty much most of my gaming time for the last few days has been Mortal Kombat 11. I finished Tales of Aria earlier this week. Actually, it was the first time I've played that game to completion. Last time I played it, I ended up finishing about halfway, and that was on the PS3. Oh, no, it was the PS2? Pretty sure it was PS2.
Yeah, it was that generation.
Yeah, it was a while ago, is the point.
Wait, Vesperia?
Yeah.
It was PS3.
Yeah, okay, it was PS3. Yeah, it was a while ago. Yeah, that game is a lot of fun, and I do like it. I will say, however, that the ending is kind of underwhelming, especially when compared to a lot of other Tales games. But I mean, it's not like it didn't wrap everything up successfully or anything like that. It managed to tie all the knots and everything, but it still was just kind of the end. But it weirdly ends up turning into prescient green Aesop that is actually a very good sort of like statement on things like climate change, especially how the older generations had the tendency to sort of kick the can of this problem down the road to the future generations to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, in Vesperia, their primary sort of like, you can call it power. So the power source is air, but the thing that uses air, that's sort of where much of their technology is based around, are these things called Blastia, which are basically like these little jewels of varying sizes, you know, absorb the air around it and then use it to, you know, do technology stuff. You know, it can be like a water pump, or it can, you know, be a light source. But much of the time, they're used to make barriers for the big city so that they can keep out monsters from, you know, getting into the city and attacking. But the problem is that air as a resource, things tend to happen if there's too much of it or too little of it in one place at any given time. If there's too much of it, it can actually become toxic and can cause, you know, weird mental and physiological effects, including inducing comas, things like that. If there's too little of it, however, it's essentially what would happen if basically there was a drought. It just, everything sort of turns into a desert, basically. What they eventually find out, however, is that the Blastia that they're using to keep the air, the problem is if it keeps going at the way it's going, it's going to unleash this thing called the Autophagos, which is like this sort of like negative antimatter entity that sort of like, you know, pollutes and screws with and mutates and absorbs everything that it touches. And they find out that the reason nobody has seen this Autophagos for so long is not because they got rid of it, but because they basically sealed it away over 100 years ago and basically left the future generations to deal with it. And one of the main sort of story points of this game is coming to terms with the fact that everybody is going to have to give up Blastia and sort of re-find new sources of power. So, like, you know, they're going to have to start using, you know, basic machinery, in other words. And, you know, there's a lot of, like, stuff like that. Damn, it is weirdly prescient and considering how old this game is. But it's good, but it kind of falls flat at the end. And now that I don't have a JRPG to, you know, do my time with that, you know, I can afford without having to do a monthly fee, I'm now realizing that Fire Emblem Three Houses cannot get here fast enough. That's July, by the way. Again,
I think Final Fantasy XIV is doing a free login campaign right now.
Yeah, you can do like four consecutive days.
Yeah, I guess. And that, you know, Mortal Kombat 11, I have realized that you should not let Baraka or Collector anywhere near that damn time power. Because they will fuck shit up if they get their hands on it. We also get a good dose of, like, what Adenia looked like.
Yep.
Before Shao Kahn came around. It was basically England, China.
Yeah.
Or actually more like England, China, Orient, something like that. Weird crossover between like three whole cultures put together.
That's true.
Yeah. Also, going through more of the crypt, I finally found out what those glowing column things are. Those are soul vaults. Those are what all those, like, soul points that you're collecting, that's the currency you use for those. But in order to use them, you have to get a hold of Ermac's amulet, which means basically you have to get your way down into the bottom of the pit, in which case Ermac then falls out of the sky and lands on a spike. And then you take his amulet, and suddenly you can get all those soul vaults and, you know, those dead monks with the glowing things in them. You can get those as well.
There are a lot of moments of, well, I guess they're not going to be needing this.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's still fun. Still fun game. Still loving it. Other than that, still doing my reading. I'm about halfway through Record of Lodoss War, The Grey Witch. So you can definitely tell that this thing was originally made in like the early 90s. Because like this is legit. Like by modern standards, it's very cliche. But then you remember that like, this is some of the first pieces of fantasy fiction published in Japan. So yeah. As we know it. So, and also, you know, remember that it was originally based on a Sword World RPG session. So there's that. And let's see, what else? I got the first volume of the classic Captain Harlock collection, the original, the one nice. Drawn by Leiji Matsumoto. This is a manga that was made like back in the late 70s, and it shows. But that's mostly due to Matsumoto's art style. Because when you think of like Matsumoto and, you know, stuff like you're thinking like, you know, Galaxy Express 39, Captain Harlock, stuff like that. Right? But the thing is that like the characters he draws like Captain Harlock tend to be sort of the exception to the rule because most of the people he draws are potato headed freaks.
Yeah.
Still good though. Still good. And it is absolutely, you know, his writing style because it is, oh boy, is it melodramatic.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. And you can definitely tell that it was originally written for kids too. Because it has that cadence that late 70s shonen manga tends to have.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. And anime. So I finished the Kogan Ninja Scrolls. I started watching Freezing again. Also got into a little series that I hear sort of was kind of a hit a couple years ago called SSSS Gridman.
Yes!
Which is a remake of a tokusatsu. It's the anime sort of spiritual remake / reboot of a tokusatsu series from back in the early 90s.
Denko Chojin Gridman.
Yeah. And holy shit, it got weird pretty much immediately.
And the funny thing about that name, by the way, is that the SSSS part is a reference to its American adaptation.
Yeah. But it seems to suggest right off the bat that everybody is living in some kind of simulation or something. Because people die and then suddenly they and their memory just sort of fade out of existence. Sort of like the whole world sort of rebuilds itself around the lack of existence that they have now. It's fucking weird. It's a Studio Trigger joint.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, people who did like Kill la Kill and Darling in the Franxx.
You know what you're getting with them.
Yeah. And it is, God, it is good, but it is just fucking weird right off the goddamn bat. And Freezing, of course, is still about, you know, women with giant tits trying to kill each other.
Is that also a Studio Trigger joint?
Nope. This is a based on a manga that was written by Lim Dal Young, who is okay. Like kind of, yeah, he's like one of the only Korean creators that has made a massive dent in the Japanese market. And pretty much all of his series have sort of these type of, how to put it? All of his series kind of have like this one piece that, you know, it's got some tropes that go with it. Usually involving a taller, large-busted woman who gets into a relationship with a young boy or man who's a couple years her junior. And usually she acts as like his guardian. And there's lots of violence. Humans tend to be bastards. And tits tend to be exposed at the most inopportune times.
As you do.
Yeah. Because Japan.
Pretty much, right?
Well, I thought you just said we couldn't blame Japan for that one.
Well, let's be honest. He kind of sort of set up a whole studio specifically to create this stuff for Japan because he knew it sold. But yeah, whatever. Yeah. All right. So I guess that's it. Anybody got anything they want to add before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, then, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And I've decided that for the next couple of episodes of Let's Weekend for this segment, I decided since, you know, being that we're a bunch of freaks of Japanese freaks and we love all things Japan, I thought I'd talk about maybe one of, for the next few weeks, one of the big four of Japanese science fiction. Because it's their world. We all just live in it. And some of these people are surprisingly influential in ways you might not expect. So, are you ready? That was a question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Answer me, goddammit!
I'm down.
Okay. So, first things first, we're going to talk about probably one of the guys who, of all four of these individuals, has probably been the one who's been published in English the most. And yet, weirdly enough, it's only a fraction of the work that he's produced. This is a gentleman by the name of Yasutaka Tsutsui. Now, Yasutaka Tsutsui got his start back in the 60s. He originally started out publishing a fanzine called Null, which lasted for a few issues that he, you know, he self-made. This particular work that he did actually attracted some of the other people that he would work on at this time. Some of the others that would eventually become a big part of the science of the Japanese sci-fi community after him. So Tsutsui is a man of many, many talents, really. He made his name first and foremost as being a forest writer, but he's also a playwright, a screenwriter, a poet, a painter, an actor, a curmudgeon personality on Japanese talking head television, a jazz musician who has occasionally composed the scores for the film adaptation of his books. And a bunch of other stuff like that. So on top of his little, you know, his little fanzine, he also started out working as a screenwriter for an early 60s anime. And I got to pull this one up because this one's actually kind of obscure. See, called Super Jetter, 1965. And these are some of the and funny enough, much as with Null, some of the other major figures in Japanese science fiction actually got their start working as a script writer for this particular show. I don't know why this one in particular managed to attract all of them, but it's just, I guess it's just one of those, you know, lightning in a bottle type things. So you're thinking, okay, so yes, Taka Tsutsui, he's a science fiction writer. What type of science fiction does he write? Well, imagine someone like Kurt Vonnegut Jr. That name familiar to anyone here?
Yeah.
Slaughterhouse-Five?
Yeah.
Slapstick, God Bless You, Mrs. Rosewater, Breakfast of Champions, Mother Night, Player Piano, all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's basically the type of thing that Tsutsui writes. Highly satirical, often biting science fiction stories, often heavily involved in the absurd, and often darkly comedic in ways that were it anybody else, it just wouldn't work, but it does. The first novel he wrote was called 4.8 Billion Delusions, and it's basically about what happens when a dispute between these two fishermen out in the middle of the ocean somehow escalates into a full-on war that ends up spreading to the entire Japanese countryside. Then he wrote another book called Primate South, which is a Cold War satire in which a bunch of circumstances and misunderstandings basically leads to a nuclear holocaust, after which, and this is according to the Science Fiction Encyclopedia, after which the sole remnants of human life is a piece of music set to autoplay on a dead planet.
Wow.
Okay.
Dark and work. Yeah, he also didn't just work on science fiction, even though that's the type of stuff that was his bread and butter. He also did historical fiction, usually of a comedic variety. One in particular is a novel he wrote called Jazz Daimyo, which is about a group of slaves from the United States who escape, try to get on a ship and escape back to Africa, but end up shipwrecking in Japan and get in the middle of a sort of inter-samurai war between this particular place in Japan. And they also accidentally introduced jazz to Japan that way too. this is actually, this is when I mentioned earlier that he would occasionally compose the scores for the film adaptation of his work. This is one of them. He is, amongst other things, a very competent player of jazz clarinet, and much of the clarinet that you hear, jazz clarinet here in this film, is actually. Also the two black guys that escaped from America, they're American actors speaking in English, but if you ever watch this film, it'll always have like Japanese audio dubbed over it. So you can clearly hear them speaking English in the background, but there's this overdramatic Japanese voice actor on top of it. Yeah. He also wrote several books that's, you know, satirize popular detective fiction. One of these books is called Millionaire's Detective, that actually became the inspiration for an incredibly popular television show that ran for several years. He also is the author of something called The Maid Trilogy, which is basically a trio of books about this live-in housemaid that works for hire, who also just so happens to be a telepath. And because she's a telepath, it means that she can actually read the mind, it's one of those satires about, like, you know, how Japanese are always trying to save face and everything, and like how they actually feel underneath it. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's downright tear inducing, but you know, he's also known for using sort of avant-garde-ish type writing contents. One of his books that was published in the 80s, let's see, where is it? It's about this guy who's a time traveler, but every time he time travels, he falls into a coma. And so when he's in a coma, you know it because several pages are blank until he wakes back up. Then you can start reading again.
That's kind of
cool.
But if there are two things he is best known for internationally, it's the two books that inspired award-winning anime adaptation. And you've probably heard of some of these. Hmm. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So probably his most famous and work that has probably been going on forever and will probably be adapted and readapted until the end of time is a short little novel that he serialized for a magazine for kids and high schoolers, teenagers. Mm-hmm. It's actually considered arguably one of the first what we would now consider light novels. A little story called The Girl Who Leapt Through Time.
Oh, that is awesome.
That was him.
Oh my God.
Yep. I also have the print edition of that in my personal library. If you remember, that's the story about the girl who keeps getting hit by a car, but every time she dies, she ends up going back to the previous day. And there's like this weird thing involving like chemicals and this other time traveler who's trying to break the cycle. You know, that book. That's the first one. The other one is actually a later one. This one wasn't actually published in the early 90s, but it ended up becoming so popular it inspired a very popular, very well received anime film. It's a little story, Paprika, which is remember this was adapted into Satoshi Kon's last film. Yep, that was also him. Paprika is the story of a woman and a group of scientists who have developed technology that can allow people to go into and explore the dreams and subconscious minds of their patients. And it's called Paprika because Paprika is sort of the alter ego that the main heroine of this story uses when she goes into people's dreams. And like this sort of like weird dream virus that starts going from person to person. It's
highly really recommended.
Also, of all the people I've discussed that I will be discussing, Yasutaka Tsutsui is the only one who is still alive. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Nice.
Yeah. See, I brought all that back into a way we could all be interested. And like I said, yeah, he's probably the most published in English of all the people I'm going to be talking about. But both Paprika and The Girl Who Left Through Time are available in English editions. As are a few of the Telepathic Maid stories. There's a couple of short story collections that are also available. Be prepared, though, because this shit is weird. Anyway. All right. So, with that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper. And as always, we have to start with the assholes of the week. And our assholes of the week are a bunch of crusty old white fuckers who think that they know how women should do with their bodies.
Man, one of these is one that Brandon knows a good bit about.
Yeah, and if I ever see him in person, I throw some fucking rocks at his head. Yeah, I don't care who hears it. The fucker cheated to become governor, and I don't give a shit.
Yep.
But anyway, first and foremost, Georgia's quote-unquote governor, Brian Kemp, signs the Living Infants Fairness and Equality Act into law, which criminalizes abortion and will actually have both women and abortion doctors put into jail if they attempt to do it.
I like that when I wrote this on the outline, I forgot to put governor, so I just wrote Georgia's Brian Kemp.
Yeah.
Which is more accurate.
Accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this this abortion bill, let's see, bans abortion as soon as a heartbeat is detectable, which is about 6 weeks in.
Yeah.
Before most know they're pregnant.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And don't think they didn't do that on purpose.
Yeah. And he also is very brazen about this. He said he's grateful to those who, quote, throughout Georgia who refuse to be silent on this issue, reject the status quo, who believe, as I do, that every baby has a right to life. We must protect life at all stages. We must remember our higher calling. Yeah.
Don't give a shit after they're pushed out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
as soon as they fall out of a woman's baby vacuum, you just don't give a shit, do you, buddy?
Yeah, it
really doesn't.
Yeah, so this will take effect at January 1st, 2020. Significantly increases the period of time for a woman to have an abortion in state, which is currently set at 20 weeks. It allows for some exceptions, including the cases of rape or incest if a woman files a police report, or when the life of the pregnant woman is threatened. A woman can also have an abortion if her pregnancy is deemed medically futile.
Yeah.
Yeah, this has been a whole part of his campaign and is just a part of a nasty movement by Republican state legislatures and governors to get this stuff into law as they're preparing.
Yeah, I give it about a month until a federal judge declares this unconstitutional and it makes its way up to the Supreme Court.
That's what their ultimate goal is, to get up to the Supreme Court for a chance to get Roe v. Wade shut down.
Yeah.
Why do they keep going after that?
Because it's a cynical political ploy that the GOP has been using for 30 years in order to have a dedicated voter base. That's literally the reason they keep doing this.
And they've got a president who has been helping to put conservative judges into the various national districts as well as in the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Basically,
how's
it's
that been
the same,
working out for him?
It's been going pretty well, actually.
Yeah, don't you remember Brett Kavanaugh?
Yeah.
He's now a justice.
Yeah, and who, at the first opportunity, voted against.
Yeah, I remember that, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For the record, you know, it is, and he has said that he respects precedent. Roe v. Wade has been legal precedent for a good 40 years now.
Yeah, I believe so.
And the Supreme Court has frequently enforced that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so the whole pro-life movement is basically part of the same political ploy that gave religious right. Basically, back in the 70s, when Bob Jones University was forced to desegregate the school, there was like a whole – well, actually, I think it was like the late 60s, early 70s. It was somewhere in between there. It was before Roe v. Wade actually happened. But basically, after Bob Jones University was forced to integrate their school, that whole thing had started up a whole sort of little group of people who Republicans realized they could latch onto this as sort of like a dedicated voter base.
Yeah.
But since the Bob Jones issue was over, they needed another issue that they could latch onto. And then somebody spoke up. And actually, if you ever want to do, go on YouTube and look for a guy and search for a guy named Frank Schaefer. He is basically one of the guys who helped kickstart the whole thing. And he basically admits, like, no, I can't believe we fucking did this. It's really just a political ploy. That's all it was. And I'm ashamed to have ever been a part of it. He even backs it up with evidence. He, you know, has written documentation. It's a completely cynical political ploy. Yeah. And that's all it is. None of these fuckers actually give a shit about abortion. It's just a way to...
It's anti-choice. It's not pro-life. Because pro-life would be giving a damn about the woman.
It is making sure they get those single-issue voters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's a reliable one.
Unfortunately.
That's the reason they keep harping on it.
Yeah. They get down on the woman when it's like, no, the guy has an equal, if not bigger, part in the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's like... You know what? I've seen people like jokingly saying, well, if we're going to go this route, let's have all men take vasectomies. They're reversible. You know, and when you want to have a kid, you know, get it undone.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying they shouldn't.
Yeah, I would actually support that.
We can't do that to men's bodies. Oh, well, then how the fuck can you do whatever you want with a woman's body?
Hmm.
Yeah, and it's like, I saw somebody else opposing, like, conservatives on abortion, we want to ban. Conservatives on gay marriage, we want to ban. Conservatives on immigration, we want to ban. Muslims, ban. Trans military members, ban. Guns, bans don't work.
Yeah.
And the truth is, if the demographics are anything to go by, and considering the election of President Trump, the religious right is basically in its death throes now, and you will probably see it completely decease within your lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And that is wonderful.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's also
the only problem is the candle does flicker violently before it goes out.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah, and I saw somebody also kind of pointing.
This is kind of what this is, honestly.
Making a good point, like, okay, so if at 6 weeks that thing is, you know, legally a person, all right, can I put down life insurance on it? So if there's a miscarriage, you know, I get money for it.
Yeah.
How about we start getting, you know, health benefits for this? You know, all this stuff that you give to an actual kid. Like, hey, let's just start applying this at 6 weeks.
I want food stamps because I'm growing a second life here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
You're driving the carpool lane.
Mm. All right. But unfortunately, my state isn't the only one who's doing this shit.
You got neighbors.
Because you know what we say in Georgia? Thank God for Alabama. Because the Alabama Senate wants to vote on a law that's even stricter than the one that we're having here in Georgia.
Yeah,
but it ain't happening without a fight.
Yeah, the minority leader for the Democrats very much spoke up about this, especially because they were just trying to ram it through as fast as possible. And he's like, hey, hold on, we can't just do this shit. I think I managed to throw enough of a fit that they spend in voting for the time being. But yeah, that one, I believe the big trick there is that if the woman files for rape charges and they end up not getting charged for it, the woman can go to jail.
Because that makes sense.
Yeah. There was also that thing where they were trying to put in – because – Most of these things, they try to, at the last minute, add in an exemption for things like rape or incest.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, the original
they
has,
decided, no, we don't want to do that.
Yeah. Bill criminalizes abortion, meaning doctors would face felony jail time up to 99 years if convicted. I think there's probably, like, one clinic in Alabama at this point.
Yep.
If lucky. The only exceptions are for a serious health risk to the pregnant woman or a lethal anomaly of the fetus. There are no exceptions for cases of rape or incest. One would not be held criminally liable for having an abortion, which some places have had that sort of thing. A woman has an abortion, and they get charged with what? Feticide? Something like that. And it's like, you know, this is fucked up shit. Yeah, I think some of the other stuff I saw in that, the weird argument about, like, you know, what about getting life insurance already? It's like, okay, now if an immigrant is pregnant, that's a U.S. citizen in there. She can't be, deported. All this sort of stuff. It's like, you know, if you want to take this fight, let's fucking have this fight and go the full distance by the argument that at 6 weeks it is a legal person.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, like I said, sometimes they'll have a lot of times when they do this, they'll try to sneak in at the very last minute an exemption for things like rape or incest. They decided to table that. And all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
Inside the Senate building.
Yeah, let's see. Rep. Terry Collins, the bill's sponsor, argued against any exceptions for rape or incest. Quote, saying any exceptions could hurt the goal of creating a court case to weigh whether embryos and fetuses are people with rights of personhood.
See, what did I tell you?
Argued that lawmakers could come back and add examples if states regain control of abortion access.
Yeah. See, what did I tell you? Cynical political ploy. That's all it fucking is.
The ACLU is ready to go whenever this does get passed into law. Mm-hmm. They say passing bills that they know will be struck down in federal court over are a waste of millions of taxpayer dollars. Could be going to address the urgent needs in our communities, like schools, healthcare, infrastructure, prisons, and so much more. If the full Senate and governor insist on passing this bill, they will see us in court.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I want – because people are probably curious. Hey, Brandon, why is it that on so many issues this is the one you seem to harp on about more than the others? I'll tell you. My mom worked for the Department of Health for the state of Georgia for 10 years, okay? Right around the time that the AIDS epidemic hit Georgia like a sledgehammer, okay? Then she went and worked for the Child Support Enforcement Agency for the state of Georgia for another 10 years before she retired. And I can't tell you how many stories she's told me of deadbeat dads, teenagers that were given bad information, people who weren't given the proper birth control that they could have, people that have been strong-armed into giving birth to children that they didn't want, and what happens to those children?
Bad things.
Bad things happen. So I have experience on my side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Think about
it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it should be the well-being of the kid and well-being of the mom.
Yeah, like, but that's not what they do. Why? Again, none of these assholes care about it. It's all a political ploy to have a steady stream of reliable voters.
Yeah,
that's all it is. That's all it ever will be.
Yeah.
And even those, like, fanatics who are willing to go in and, like, bomb abortion clinics, those assholes are pawns in all of this because they are the result of this political ploy. That is the logical conclusion.
Yeah, those that hang outside of abortion clinics yelling at the people going in.
Yeah.
And it's like Planned Parents aren't just abortion clinics. They're general health clinics.
Abortion makes up for like 2% of everything they actually do.
And it's not
– for a lot of people, they're the only health care that they can actually get a hold of because Planned Parenthood is technically a free clinic.
Yeah.
For a lot of things. They're the places where you can get free pap smears and mammograms and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely look up the John Oliver segment on CPCs.
Yeah.
Which are
crisis pregnancy centers.
Yes, which are a very insidious, like, religious
propaganda centers.
Yeah, they essentially try to pose as abortion clinics.
Yes.
and try to convince the women, try to trick them to coming in.
They're predators who prey on, you know, vulnerable women. That's exactly what they do.
And try to lie to them about needing to keep the kid, tell them all sorts of falsehoods,
show them
all around
misleading pictures of what their kid looks like right now.
Yes. Yeah. These people do not need medical licenses to do this shit. They just get, you know, the ultrasound stuff, like, oh, hey, here's the kid, you know, and all this when it's, you know, weeks in where there's not really much there.
No.
Just try to, you know, fool them into thinking, oh, I should have this kid, even if they're not. Or just tell them a bunch of...
Your baby already has fingernails. You're full of dog shit.
It's 7 weeks. They barely have
a
head.
Fish. Yeah, it looks like a fish. Looks like a fish embryo. Slug. That's exactly what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, on to the good stuff. The hero of the week. And our hero of the week is BBC interviewer and famous British conservative... Andrew Neil. Neil is a famed Tory politician and editor, writer, speaker.
Which for those that might need to know, it means he's on the side of Theresa May.
Yeah, Tories are the conservatives. They're called the conservatives. Tory
they're currently in charge of the government right now.
Yeah, just barely. They had the only way
held together with duct tape and chewing gum.
Yeah, basically the only way they were able to keep enough power was that they had to make a coalition with a fringe Ulster Unionist party from Northern Ireland. Yeah, but anyway, so Andrew Neil on his program on the BBC, he interviewed everybody's favorite, you know, Damien lookalike Ben Shapiro. And
oh god! Now that you say that, I'm never going to be able to unsee that.
Yeah. it basically showed just how utterly pathetic, stupid, and self-entitled and narcissistic this asshole really is.
Yeah, because he spends a lot of it saying, you know, he's asking very pointed questions, like he is. Because the book is about how America is. Like, American politics is angry right now. And
yeah,
so he's
no
kind
shit.
Of – he's spending, like, 15 minutes trying to ask him questions about things he's said and written in the past, like whether he's added to this whole toxic atmosphere we have currently.
Spoiler alert, he has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And while he tries to constantly turn it around and say, you know, no, you're the one that's picking these things out. It's like, no, this – like, he's – constantly quoting from his book, just finding things he's, you know, written and said. You know, seems all fair game for most people, but he's not interested in being criticized or having any tough questions. He just wants, you know, a cake interview.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, notice this is actually an ongoing trend because all of these American pseudo-conservative intellectuals and thinkers will go over and interviewed on the BBC, and then you completely find out that the shtick that they do in the U.S. doesn't work outside of it.
Nope.
Yeah, because he constantly, you know, tries to say, you know, right and left, and it's like, oh, we don't really have that here. We have, you know, more nuanced, like, scale of where people are at. Whereas here it's just, you know, you're either on the left or the right, or you're a weirdo that's in the center.
Or, you know, it's outside the UNITS where you're looking in. He's like, okay, you guys have a center-right and a far-right party.
Like,
you know, in the UK, they've got, you know, they got the Labour Party, which is further to the left than probably even Bernie Sanders. And then you've got the Conservatives, who are more like our Democrats. You know, it's completely the Overton window outside of the United States is very different.
Yeah, it's the thing when I was, you know, trying to figure out just on my own, like, what left, right, Democrats, Republican, like, hearing people from other countries talk about stuff, it just completely made everything impossible to penetrate what is what.
Yeah, like, for example, outside the United States, the word liberal usually refers to what we would call a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're saying, like, the conservatives are on the left in Britain.
Well, no, they're just on – they're too – to the left of our Republican Party because the Overton window is so far to the right that, you know, wanting a school lunch program basically makes you to the left of Mouse Butt, you know.
Yeah, like saying the conservatives in the UK are more like the Democrats here. It's like, that just makes no sense the way people talk about politics here.
Yeah, because like I said, that shtick only works here.
Yeah.
That's why when Ben Shapiro went on this program, he got so flustered with this person who he assumed was on the left that he ended up taking off his microphone and storming off the set.
He seriously did?
Yeah.
What a fucking man, baby.
And his last words were like, everybody knows who I am, no one knows who you are.
And he's like, well, I never heard of you until I did the briefing for this.
I was like...
he also ended like, well, thank you for being on and show us that there's no anger in American politics.
Owned.
Yeah, thank you for your time and showing that anger is not a part of American political discourse. Now, Mr. Shapiro, we'll say goodbye.
Yep. And then he went on and he ran about how he was getting, guff from this supposed left-wing presenter on the BBC. Like I said, Andrew Neil is not on the left. He is a Tory. So, you know, he is very much a conservative, but he is the type of conservative that exists outside of the United States.
Well, you used to have that type of conservative in the United States, but I don't know where that went.
Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan.
1980.
Yeah.
And then any survivors were purged again after 94.
Yeah. And then the thing is, even Canada has their share, like I said earlier, even Canada has its share of far right evangelical assholes. But here's the thing, in the Conservative Party in Canada, they're on the fringe. They're not as heavily. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when, you know, as of like the last like 10, 15 years, like the far-right people have taken over the Republican Party.
Yeah. Even fucking Stephen Harper, of all people, you know, would still be considered to the left of, say, fucking, you know, George W. Bush, even though he kind of wanted to be the Canadian George W. Bush.
Yeah. Well, there were similarities.
But, yeah. But even he would not want to touch, you know, Canada's Medicare system. But... Yeah. That's how fucked up politics in the United States are. And it always baffles people outside of it when they're looking in.
Yeah, well, we got a bunch of examples of how stupid it is.
Yeah, and we're fixing to get to those now. All right, so now to start the proper show proper. First and foremost, the House Judiciary Committee officially voted to hold our Attorney General William Barr in contempt.
Hooray.
Yep, and this doesn't really seem like it'll mean anything.
I'm sure he's going to hold himself in contempt by the time this is all over.
Yeah, good prediction.
Well, he is pretty contemptible, so.
Yeah, it's true. But, so basically Ralph Nadler, the head of the committee, basically said that this was not a decision we take lightly. It is a result of months upon months of consultation, requests, and the evidence that has been brought forward to us.
Yep, and basically we're at a point where we need the people in Washington to hold the administration, to check.
Yeah, this is basically Nixon at night around 1970, where everything's finally starting to fall apart. And for those who don't know, Nixon's attorney general during Watergate was actually arrested and went to prison. He was actually charged with obstruction of justice and did jail time for it.
Yeah.
Gee, that would be nice.
Well, speaking
somebody
of precedent,
did something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of the orange elephant in the room, Trump officially invoked executive privilege over the Mueller report. Yeah, that's not going to last very long. Yes.
Trying to keep the unredacted Mueller report getting out to Congress, essentially.
What's he so afraid of?
That's the oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
And what you had in, like, when we talked last week about him suing the two banks, trying to keep them from releasing their tax records and such with Trump.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Why else would he be doing that?
Because he doesn't want to lose face and let everybody find out for sure what we already know. He's cash poor.
Whoa, by the way, that you would mention that, and we'll get to that in just a note. And just, you know, actually, do we have it listed here? I don't think we have it listed
the
here.
The tax thing, I think, is in there somewhere.
Where is it?
It's just one or two lines down.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. No, I was talking about the New York Times.
Oh.
Yeah, we don't have it listed here, so I'll just bring it up really quick.
Go ahead.
The New York Times actually managed to get a hold of Trump's tax returns from, that lasted from like the mid-80s to like 1994. Hmm. He ended up losing over, what was it, $2.6 billion?
At least in 1 year, he lost enough to account for 1%.
2%. 2 cents. It was 2 cents for every... In the United States.
1%.
Nope, it was 2 cents for every dollar.
Essentially enough to account for... You know, a very large chunk for one person of all businesses in the country.
Yeah, that's how much money he lost.
So successful.
And essentially because of that, he
so basically
reported as a loss and not have to pay income tax.
Oh, yeah, he'll spin years. It.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's definitely not as rich as he makes on. He's definitely a millionaire, but...
Maybe if you put a negative in front of that.
It's mostly, like, again, the dude is a con man. That's
But he lucked into having property in downtown Manhattan as it got turned around in the 90s. Being a nice place to be.
Which also accounts for why he's such good buddies with Rudy Giuliani.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the cousin fucker.
And who was at one time and the former mayor of New York, who is partly responsible for turning, Times Square into a you see what it is now.
Yeah.
It isn't, huh?
Shit show.
Yeah, it's not as covered with his porno theaters, but anyway, Speaking of Trump's taxes, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin has officially denied House Dems' request for access to Trump's taxes, which basically all that means now is that earlier today they subpoenaed.
Mm.
So this is what we've been waiting on, and it's finally happening.
Yeah, because it's not something that he can actually stop.
Nope.
I do wonder... You know, we're all pretty rabid about wanting to see his tax returns, and there is a lot of precedent there, but are we as fanatical as they were about the birth certificate?
Well, there's a big difference between that and the birth certificate, and that unlike the birth certificate, we've actually got evidence for this one.
Yeah, well, and it's precedent that every other president has given their tax return to.
Yeah,
in the last 4 years. It's not something that he's the first one to do that since whatever in the 70s or the 60s. And it's like, you know, there's no reason not to unless you got something to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And the actions he's shown, like suing the banks to keep them from releasing, you know, the records and, you know, trying to block the tax returns from the IRS, you know. Doesn't really say, you know, there's nothing here. That's not what you get out of that message there.
Hmm.
Whereas they try to say, you know, they're wasting our time with all this shit. And it's like, no. You know, if there weren't anything there, you'd let them have it.
Yeah.
It's like seeing smoke and going up to your neighbor and, never mind. It was just, I just burnt a little bit of my brisket. No big deal. Instead of then seeing smoke and it's like the entire backyard is on fire. No, nothing's happening. No, it's all good. Nope.
I'm not cooking meth. It didn't get out of hand.
Let his own house burn down to own the libs.
Mm-hmm. But, anyway, speaking again of Trump's tax returns, the New York Senate, New York State Senate, passed a bill that will allow for the raise of Trump's state tax returns.
That's nice because that gives you some info.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah,
you gotta put your adjusted gross income on that shit.
Yeah, it's called the Trust Act. We'll let New York Tax Commissioner release any state tax return requested by one of the three congressional committees for any specific and legitimate legislative purpose. Those committees would be the House Ways and Means Committee, headed up by who, Brandon?
House Ways and Means Committee, held up by...
Is that Francine Waters?
Yep. Maxine Waters.
Maxine Waters, sorry. Mm-hmm. The Senate Finance Committee, which I don't know who's in charge of that. Probably a Republican, I would assume. And the Joint Committee on Taxation. We definitely know one of those three is definitely interested in this news.
Oh, yeah.
but yeah. Yeah, let's see.
And a lot of his businesses are registered in New York, so that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, the NRA is registered in New York, too.
Ooh. Yeah, and guess who else is what's the phrase? They're nonprofit status is currently under review in New York. Because if that gets revoked, then the NRA dies.
Yeah.
Like, literally, that is the end of them.
Yeah, their membership is not that huge, and especially right now is not that engaged to be putting money into them.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, next up, in more Trump news, President Trump this week pardoned a U.S. Army soldier that a few years ago, during the Iraq War, tortured and killed a bombing suspect.
Yeah, so we should probably go over the exact things that happened here with him.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, hold on a second. Let's see. Behenna deployed to Iraq in 2007. The following year, two soldiers and friends of Behenna were killed in a roadside explosion, and he was on the scene. Shortly after the soldier's death, there was an intelligence report saying then Iraqi operative Ali Mansour possibly helped organize the explosion. So they arrested him, interrogated him, but then freed him because they had no conclusive evidence tying him to the explosion. Less than a month later, Behenna went to interrogate Mansour on his own without authorization, stripped Mansour naked, and shot him twice. He left the body there, didn't tell anybody, and the next day the Iraqi police found him, and they ended up figuring out it was Behenna. He maintained he acted in self-defense, which, you know, doesn't make any sense, and they saw through it. Military prosecutors told the jury at his 2009 court-martial that they believe Behenna killed Mansour to avenge the loss of the two soldiers, which makes sense. When he was serving his sentence, they called him a model prisoner. He ended up serving 5 years in prison. He was sentenced to 25 years, so 25 years for unpremeditated murder in a combat zone by a military court, but there were issues involving it. But he only served 5 years, and now Trump has granted a pardon to him.
Quite the rogues gallery of people that he's been pardoning.
Yeah. It's true.
Especially since sentence started in 2009, so he's been out for about 5 years now. So it's not even somebody that's currently in prison.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next up. So back in 2015, you may remember the story that happened with Miss Sandra Bland.
Yes.
Who you remember? She later, I believe, she hung herself in her jail cell. No, she died in police custody. That's what happened.
Yeah. Nothing happened there. Nothing nefarious.
Yeah, well, we just found out this week that she actually recorded the whole thing on her cell phone. Yeah.
Apparently nobody knew until now. It shows the Texas State Trooper, what's his name here? Brian Encinia, a state trooper, telling Bland that he will drag her out of her car as she questions why she is being apprehended. And he pulls out a stun gun, points it at Bland, and then you're going to stun me? Asks Bland. I will light you up, he replied. A 39-second video of the arrest was published Monday by an investigative news program on the news station WFAA. It's the first time Bland's video has been made public. Because I think the only video we've had is from his squad car's dashboard cam.
Yeah.
Which couldn't really show much.
No, it's a little too far out.
Yeah. And yeah, she died in custody July 13th, 2015. A few days later, it was ruled a suicide. And now her family is basically like, okay, wait, we need to open this back up because this paints everything in a completely different light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, they got more quotes here from the video. Why am I being apprehended? You just opened my car door. Encina replies, I'm going to drag you out of here. Bland, you're threatening to drag me out of my own car? After he threatens to shoot her with the stun gun, Bland complies and gets out of her car. Wow, wow, you're doing all of this for a failure to signal? Let's take this to court. Let's do it for a failure to signal. Encina then tells her to get off her phone. I'm not on my phone. I have a right to record. This is my property. The trooper then orders her to put her phone down, and the video ends. Encina was fired as a state trooper after Bland's death, indicted by a grand jury for perjury. However, the charges were later dropped after he agreed to never work in law enforcement again. Mm. That's pretty light light consequences.
Mm. Yeah.
Hey, go find something else to do for work. Mm. Which I share with cop resume. You know, there's a lot of options. Mm. Security and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But now, yep, they should definitely open this up.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, next, this story is out of Ireland. So over in Ireland, there was a World War II sign that had started falling into disrepair. So a group of volunteers came together, and they decided to restore it and to its original condition. Now, when I'm talking about World War II signs, I'm talking about big white signs that they would put on the side.
Yeah, for pilots.
Kind of like a cliff.
Notice.
Yeah.
It usually said air, A-E-R-E, which is...
Ire, as in Ireland, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like an old Irish name for their country. Just say, hey, this is Ireland. You should probably, you know, figure out where you're at. And they had numbers on them, so you knew. So the people on the ally side would know, like, okay, I'm at 7. This means, you know, I am here.
Well, it's also because Ireland was actually neutral during the war.
Hmm. Yeah. It was like pointing like where you were at as far as mm-hmm. Ireland was concerned. So
it's like, hey, don't bomb here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I
get off our lawn.
Such as,
yeah.
Yeah. Like a sign of like where at in Ireland you were over, so you know where to go mm-hmm. if you got lost. Because they didn't have, you know, GPSs or anything easy like that to figure out where they need to go. They hopefully, you know, were trained enough as far as, you know, what to look for, that they did find where they needed to go. But yeah, I think we talked about this sort of thing in the past where due to, you know, lack of rain, that sort of stuff, like they had been finding these signs in some areas that had just gotten grown over from grass mm-hmm. over the years mm-hmm. And sort of discovering that there was more of these out there.
Yeah. There's currently 5 of them that are known to still remain.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right. This is historic. I mean, that's worth preserving.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had about 80 of these things around the island, or around Ireland.
Yeah.
Placed roughly every 10 miles along their coast.
Hmm. I really think a lot of people didn't know that Ireland was actually neutral during the war.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the reason why they did them.
Hmm.
Anyway, now over to Aussieland, Australia. They were printing out a new series of in Australian money, of course, and they accidentally printed about 400 million of them with a typo on it.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, where it says it is a great responsibility. Forgets that last I, responsibility.
Yeah.
46 million of them are in circulation right now. 400 million were printed.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, it seems like there's about 350 million they're going to get burnt and reprinted. And these other ones, you should probably save one of them if you got one.
Yeah.
And you can spare it.
It's going to be a collector's item in a few years.
Yeah. The total value of the notes in circulation is around 2.3 billion Australian, about 1.6 US. That's a lot of money to fuck up.
Yeah. And it's, we don't often talk about the Australian political climate over here on the.
I should talk about that. They're actually going to be having their election, I think, in a couple days. And it looks like the Liberal Party, the Conservatives, they're about to tumble.
Yeah. So if you think that things are bad in the U.S., just remember, at least it's not Australia.
Well, you know, Australia also has stricter gun laws.
Yeah.
They haven't had a mass shooting in over,
Yeah, but they have a new PM every 15 minutes, so.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And John Lieber did a good segment on some of the crazy people they have running for that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Australia, I think it was Greg Proops who famously said that Australia is like Arkansas with a beach.
Makes sense.
But it's a whole continent with a no fat chick sticker on it. Something like that. Anyway.
The local fauna,
next up, Well, it's basically there to prove that God hates humans. And constantly comes up with new brutal ways to find ways to mutilate them. Anyway.
New terrifying creatures.
Next up. Story out of the UK. The UK went a week without coal power. That's a whole week without using a single piece of coal for the first time since 1882.
That's incredible.
That's progress.
Yeah.
Yeah. This whole renewable resources thing might catch on.
Well, it might, or we're going to catch off.
I mean, the UK, keep in mind, the UK is about the size of like one American state.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe a little bigger.
Basically, the distribution of their power, at least over the past week, was 45% gas, 21% nuclear, 11% wind, 10% imports, 6% biomass, 6% solar, 1% hydro, and I guess 0% battery storage.
Yeah. And no coal.
Yeah, for the first time.
Imports is kind of vague, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's imports is usually from another country's grid. So France or Italy or whoever's nearby.
But
that's, so they're pleading the fifth on that percentage.
Yeah. But still, being able to accomplish that since 1880, that's a pretty big deal. If it is kind of got an asterisk next to it.
Yeah.
Shows like if they can do it, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. So good job, UK. Yeah. I think. Maybe.
Just sort that Brexit.
This one part.
Yeah. next up, Qantas, which is aviation company.
Yeah.
Has actually launched the world's first zero garbage flight.
Yep.
That's good.
Produce no landfill waste as the airline embarks on a mission to cut out the use of 100 million plastic items from its planes by next year. And yeah, it currently produces the equivalent of 80 fully laden Boeing 747 jumbos per year in waste across its Qantas and Jetstar operations.
Yep.
And so they had a flight had a flight from Sydney to Adelaide. Customers found meal containers made out of biodegradable packaging, made from sugar cane, cutlery made from crop starch, and paper cups. Those products will be turned into compost and used in gardens and farms across the country. Any plastic items such as bottles or any paper items will be collected and recycled.
Yeah, that's kind of how you should do it.
Yeah.
Okay. You know,
businesses don't really work that way oftentimes.
No, but it's starting to go that way.
Well, now that the reality of climate change has finally started to dawn on most of the world's population, after the fact, I guess, people have started to realize it's okay, we need to start taking this shit seriously.
Yeah.
Like, remember how long it took people to really react to greenhouse gases mm-hmm. as an issue, especially with, you know, aerosol cans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, anyway. Next up, Denver, Colorado voters have approved an ordinance to not legalize. We need to change that. It's not legalize. It's decriminalize yes. psychedelic mushrooms.
Yes.
Oh, that's
yeah.
And mental health sufferers everywhere rejoice.
Yeah.
Everywhere. So what in this Colorado.
Means, what that means is, it's still a crime to try and sell the stuff. But if you have it, if you possess it, there's no problem.
Mm.
If the cops find you possessing it, it's not a problem. That's what it means.
Yeah.
And if you know how the history happened with weed, this is usually the first step to actual full legalization.
Yeah.
So,
and it barely passed at 50.56%.
Wow. Yeah.
For it. So about 2,000 votes.
Yep. It voting is important, folks.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm now going to suddenly take a major interest in agriculture.
You're going to go see our Rocky Mountains.
You're going to go to Rocky Mountain High.
Yeah, that suddenly got a whole new meaning, didn't it?
Yep.
Suddenly.
Yeah.
I would say suddenly, but this is Colorado, Denver, we're talking about. Anyway. Next up, Jeff Bezos has decided that he wants to basically do an Elon Musk and get people to space and the moon.
Yeah, you know, in a presentation that very much screams, this guy has nothing to do now that he's single with his money.
Ooh.
Oh, God.
Yeah, even still with like half his money, whatever it is. it is a pretty crazy presentation he had. Especially kind of just being the only person there. Basically, let's see, he started his presentation by saying that the Earth is the best planet, presenting quotes from people like the late astronomer Carl Sagan.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's a very weird thing to do.
Carl Earth Sagan?
Is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, just having quotes. Like, Earth is great. Here's these quotes to prove it, sort of thing.
Cringe.
He stressed that humans, as humans, we can both work on the here and now and get started on the large scale problems. Large scale problems that involve spending tons of money to get into space. Now it's like solving actual problems that exist here on Earth.
Yeah, like paying your employees a decent wage or giving them more than 15 minutes to go to the bathroom.
Wow. Yeah, he claimed that, quote, we will run out of energy on Earth, and, quotes, this is just arithmetic.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, but it says that humanity's energy use is unsustainable. Also says that we can focus on energy efficiency, but that problem, the problem with that idea is that it's already assumed. laid out various examples of improved efficiency from the amount of work that was acquired. Required 200 years ago to create artificial light to the amount of fuel that was required to get one human around an airplane. What happens when a limited demand meets finite resources? The answer is incredibly simple: rationing. The good news is that if we move out into the solar system for all practical purposes, we have unlimited resources. Sure.
It's a bit of an assumption, but we can hope.
So
there's a big gap of all of the problems that you have to solve to get there.
Yeah, and a lot of it's also just physical stuff. Like, look at the physical issues. Our specially trained astronauts suffer out in space as well as when they come back.
Yeah.
Like bone density loss. There was that whole study. I don't know what the whole outcome of it was, but they had a twin go into space. Yeah, and the other one stay on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there's lots of stuff we still don't know about the physical toll and, that happens.
And I think the psychological toll.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong. I get a gut feeling that humans will not thrive off of their home planet for very long.
It would definitely, at least not in space. If we can get to
another planet, Mars,
yeah,
you can start doing some stuff.
Yeah.
where you have like gravity and such that can, you know, help hopefully normalize it.
Yeah, maybe like five generations in, those yeah. humans would be adjusted to that particular planet. But yeah.
Yeah, so you said, so we get to choose. Do we want stasis and rationing, or do we want dynamism and growth? Like, those are very fucking business terms.
Like, dynamism.
And
God damn it. He has to put it in business shit. Like, God damn it.
Well, yeah, this is an easy choice.
It's what he knows.
Buzzwords.
He doesn't say if humanity moves out into the solar system, we could have a trillion humans, which means we could have 1,000 Mozarts and 1,000 Einsteins, which is not.
That's not how that works.
No, it also means we can have 1,000 Milo Yiannopouluses, so.
Well, and we can also have, like, 4.9 billion slave wage earners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pretty sure he knows about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of shit there. Just shitty ideas. It's like, I have all this money. Amazon already makes a shit ton of stuff, and I don't have to sit here and, you know, manage all of it, so I can just.
And I hate bagging on somebody's dream there, but. Jesus fuck.
I mean, it's like him and Elon Musk are very much guys who have dreams and ideas that aren't completely wrong, but the things they could do here on Earth with the massive wealth that they have and their ability to, you know, fund startups and companies to actually accomplish that stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the difference between Elon and Bezos is that Elon actually is doing stuff here.
He does, yeah.
And Bezos has done.
Come on, guys.
They're Dr. Light and Dr. Wiley. I figured it out.
Yep.
Yeah, and
who's supposed to be
the same? At neither one's really a great person either.
Mm. Yeah,
Musk is a shitty person from everything we've seen, and I think he also took shots at Bezos after all this stuff. Which, sure, whatever. And yeah, he's talking about space habitats. Trying to do that stuff in space. These artificial space habitats he has an ideas for would be many miles long and hold 1 million or more people each. This is a very different colony than the International Space Station. It's not really a colony. There's like a couple dozen people there. They're doing specifically like experiments and such. Bezos said that his new space colonies would have high-speed transport in agricultural areas, and we added a little drone there. While showing the animated video of his space colony idea. So you got to see the GIF there. And it's like, how are you going to create a working ecosystem in space that mimics the way things work here on Earth? Like, that's an immense amount of time, money, and research that I don't think even he has. Yeah, to accomplish, because essentially this is all like sci-fi art stuff.
Yeah,
like Phil, you probably read tons of books with this kind of art in it.
Oh yeah,
like Halo is this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
And all this shit.
Oh, so he's basically wanting to build a ring world.
That's not going to work.
Yeah, ring world.
What was the
worlds don't actually work.
That's the big. Universal government thing.
The Citadel?
Yeah, that's basically.
Yeah, that's more of like a colony, like, and they got that from Gundam.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what this kind of looks like.
It's a catchphrase on this show.
These colonies that looks like it's on like a gigantic satellite.
That's what it is. It's from Gundam.
Zeon.
Yeah.
And he's like, some of them would be more recreation for these colonies. You know, these are really pleasant places to live. There's a moose on here. Of course, that means it's pleasant. There's a bird. Yeah, sure. So these colonies might choose to replicate Earth cities. They might pick historical cities and mimic them in some way. I was like, what the fuck is this? Is fuck
has
you.
He been playing
fuck
the
you.
Fucking Sims?
Fuck you, Jeff
something?
Bezos.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. If you know Gundam, you know how this eventually turns out.
Yeah.
Do you want Zeon? Because this is how you get Zeon.
How you get Zeon. Or the Expanse.
Yeah. I think the Expanse is more likely, but I think the Expanse's science is actually grounded in reality. Where this
and how does that happen? It still ends up in a civil war.
Yeah.
And he's also acknowledging certain things like infrastructure is a thing that's a big issue here because we don't have infrastructure for space travel.
Well, you don't have.
Or for that matter, it's also the Legend of the Or for that matter, it's also Legend of the Galactic Heroes, because how that happened was because eventually, after all the colonies got there, that more and more of the stuff started to focus onto another planet. That started a civil war that ultimately wrecked planet Earth, and then that sets off the whole thing for Rudolf von Goldenbaum starting the Empire and all that other shit.
Yeah, but, and relates it to, like, if Amazon had to build the U.S. postal system for them to work, it would not have gotten off the ground. If they had to invent payment systems like credit cards, that also would not have allowed Amazon to succeed. And, like, that, like, his ideas kind of at its core is to set up the infrastructure so that the next generation can start building the colonies, and then and that sort of keeps going on and on. It's like,
you just gotta love the boardroom bullshitters.
And it's like, no, how about, okay, you can have some people working on this, but also you've got shit tons of money, the richest man on Earth.
Out of curiosity, just out of curiosity, does Jeff Bezos by any chance have a background in engineering? Because really, this is the type of shit you would expect an engineer to start spouting.
He's more of a software guy, at least he was.
Let's Google him.
Yeah.
Anyway,
let's see. What is he? Let's see. He was in high school. He worked at McDonald's. Okay. Attends student science training program at University of Florida. High school valedictorian. Graduated from Princeton with a 4.2 GPA. Bachelor of Science degrees in electrical engineering, computer science.
There it is.
Yeah.
Told you.
Yeah. So there we go.
God damn it. How I fucking called it.
Yep. And yeah, it's like, not all these ideas are bad. They're just so pie in the sky.
Yeah.
That's like, we've got immediate problems we could use some of that money for right now.
So
there's no reason you can't even set like $50 billion of your dollars to help out with a lot of shit that's wrong with, you know, not even just the US, but the world in general. Like, start helping seed, you know, solar panels across this country.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Amazon could get involved with that, and that would be a great thing.
That'd be amazing.
But no.
Especially even to the point, like, we could have, like, roads that have solar panels built into them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
As a means of, and that would also help, like, when it snows. Like, those roads would be warmer by the stored power they have, and it would help start melting that snow faster. Make them safer to drive in bad weather.
Without all the salt.
Yeah.
Like, hey, there's less, you know, environmental impact for that. Not having the road salt and all that shit.
Anyway. All right. So, anyway, now we're on to the entertainment portion of the show. And the first story of that is Avengers Endgame has officially passed Titanic as the second highest grossing movie of all time.
You're joking.
It will be the highest grossing movie of all time in about a month.
And it happened way faster too.
Yeah.
It took 11 days for Avengers Endgame to hit it Avatar took 47 days to hit that benchmark.
Avatar is still technically the highest grossing of all time,
and it's $2.78 billion. Titanic was $2.187 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers game is over that, and this is just over from last weekend, so
yeah,
it could be even higher at this point. But yeah, it's done over $600 million at the domestic box office, which is huge. It's ninth highest so far. I'm not sure what the number one domestic is. I think Star Wars, The Force Awakens, was $900 million, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, this is going to go way past that, because I know a lot of people who are going to see it more than once.
Oh, yeah. You'd also think the Chinese market for it as well. Because I'm pretty sure every goddamn human being in Beijing took the day off when that movie came out.
Yeah. Yeah, like, the first weekend was just $1.2 billion, which is, like, more than most movies have gotten in their tired runs. That's just one weekend, which is crazy.
Yeah,
but also, like,
by the way,
like, ticket prices have gone up.
Yeah,
it's like, that's the thing that helps these movies get there.
Yeah,
especially with repeat viewers as well.
Yeah, and it also gives James Cameron just a little bit more, you know, inspiration to go like, okay, I need to get these Avatar sequels done. Which leads us into our next story, which is that we now know what Disney's movie lineup is going to be through 2027. And it involves, yes, the Avatar sequels. The first one's going to come out in 2021. Also Star Wars and a whole fuckload of others.
Yeah, they've started integrating the Fox lineup into their the current lineup, which has evolved a lot of stuff getting pushed. Some's just been a couple months, like the stuff is coming out this year, which you know includes up a lot of random stuff, like Dark Phoenix is in June. I don't think that changed at all. There's a lot of stuff coming out. Like Disney has 15 movies coming out the rest of the year.
Yep.
That's 15 from May to December, not counting the first 5 months of the year. Tolkien is the one that's coming out today.
Today, yeah.
Zaladin, there's Dark Phoenix. Toy Story 4 is June 21st. Stuber from Fox is July 12th. Lion King is July 19th. Art of Racing in the Rain, which I think is a Formula One movie, is August 9th. Ready or Not, it's August 23rd. It's like every few weeks they got something else coming out.
That's Ad Astra, September 20th. Woman in the Window, October 4th. Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. Okay.
Ford versus Ferrari is the Formula One movie I was talking about.
Yeah, November that's 15th. November 15th. Then the movie I'm definitely waiting on, which is Frozen 2. That comes out on November 22nd.
And then Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker is the 20th, and Spies in Disguise from Fox is on Christmas.
And that's all just this year.
Yeah. We got next year, which has – there's a bunch of untitled stuff here as we start going because it's just them putting, you know, time for this stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have to go through all of those.
No, but there's like the New Mutants still on here from Fox. So some of the mutant stuff, X-Men stuff is still there. There's like an untitled Marvel movie that's coming out next May. Untitled Pixar's June. Yeah, we got stuff all over the place here.
Oh, yeah, and a Bob's Burgers movie.
Yeah. That was announced 2 years ago, I think, so it's still coming. It's July 17th. There's a Jungle Cruise movie, so based on the Jungle Cruise. I guess there's another Marvel movie in November. There's a Disney anime movie in November next year. There's a West Side Story adaptation in December, and Cruella is also in December.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, next year we got Untitled Disney Marvels, February. What's the other one? There's Marvel in May. There's Marvel in November. There's like, Disney Live Action in March 12th. Another one in May. July and October. It's Disney Animation in November. Pixar in June. Indiana Jones, July 9th. So there's that on there.
Oh,
Avatar 2. Yeah, Avatar 2 shows up December 17th, 2021.
Yeah.
Which is a year after it was scheduled, the last time it was scheduled.
Well, it's James Cameron. That's kind of...
Well, they're also like pushing it as like something that will be a tentpole, I guess, for 2021.
Yeah. But anyway.
So it pushes the Avatar lineup to, 2023 for Avatar 3, 2025 for Avatar 4, and 2027 for Avatar 5. And in case you're wondering about Star Wars, they start returning in 2022 and then alternate years after that.
All right.
So 2024 and 2026. Goddamn, we got to figure out better names for this because saying 2020 over and over again for 10 years is going to be annoying.
All right.
Double Odd 25. I don't know.
All right. So, anyway, now we know that. Next up, Chadwick Boseman is going to be playing the new film, Yasuke. Now, you're probably wondering, who's Yasuke? Yasuke was a retainer who served under Oda Nobunaga. He was also African.
Oh,
okay.
He was a black man, and I believe he was a servant, or he may have been a slave for, I think, a Portuguese merchant who was given over to Nobunaga as a gift and sort of became his retainer. So he was a full-fledged samurai.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
When is this coming out?
Yeah. Let's see. I don't know. It doesn't say. I think it's just announcing it.
Just announcing it's happening.
Yasuke was a native of Portuguese Mozambique who was brought to Japan as a slave to Jesuit missionaries. He was the first black man to set foot on Japanese soil. He's aroused the interest of Nobunaga, a ruthless warlord seeking to unite the fractured country under his banner. A complex relationship developed the two men as Yasuke earned Nobunaga's friendship, respect, and ultimately the honor, swords, and title of samurai.
And the guy who's writing the script right now is Doug Miro, co-created the hit Netflix series Narcos.
Which is great. You should watch it.
Yeah. And yeah, it's kind of just announcing it and some of the people working on it. I guess MGM is also working on a Yasuke project. So we may get two of those movies.
Yeah. There's actually only a the thing is they're both of those movies will can be radically different, because the thing is, the amount of information we actually have on Yasuke is pretty bare bones. There's like a bunch of stories about like how when he was first brought to Nobunaga, he didn't believe in the idea that a person could actually have black skin, so he had a bunch of servants like soap him down and scrub him to see if he covered himself in ink or stuff like that.
Okay,
that's,
so the,
that's all like hearsay, though.
The person that they have set to write the script for the MGM movie wrote a short called The Lord of Catan. And you might think maybe it's related to the Settlers of Catan. The description is a husband and wife find themselves thrust into an apocalyptic rivalry over a game of Settlers of Catan.
And I know you're thinking, sounds like a silly notion, but you've never played Settlers
of Catan. That totally happens. It's,
yeah, that's his most recent writing credit.
Yeah. Anyway, and our penultimate story for the night, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt will get an interactive special on Netflix next year.
Hell yeah.
Yep, I'll be
there. Yeah, because the show's great. It's over now, which it ended pretty well. But yeah, the Netflix is like expanding their interactive stuff, and this is this could be a pretty cool way to expand on that.
Yeah,
Especially just getting Tina Fey and the rest of the crew there doing some ridiculous shit.
Yeah.
But anyway, so and finally, the last story of the night, we got a teaser trailer for HBO's Watchmen series. And it is basically, if you look at, if you only know somewhat about Watchmen and you watch the trailer, you're like, wait, what the fuck is this? But if you've actually read the graphic novel, you know exactly what this is. This is the sequel. This is what happened. Yeah. Okay, because we've all read the book, haven't we?
No, it's sitting right behind me and I still haven't read it.
Okay, so you've seen the movie.
Yeah.
Have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
Lisa?
No, I was going to watch or read the graphic novel. It's sitting behind me, and I still haven't done it.
Well, fuck it. It's over 30 years old, so I'm about to spoil it for you. And it's all your goddamn fault.
I know.
Anyway, for all of you who've read the book and seen the movie, you know how it ends. Rorschach's journal gets mailed off to the New Frontiersman, which is like this fringe far-right newspaper, and the kid who's working as assistant gets a hold of it. Well, this series is basically shows what happens after that happened, which is
the
journal gets widely publicized and it ends up inspiring a whole terrorist cell.
Yeah,
it makes sense, especially because it's a modern interpretation of it. So,
well, it kind of has to, because the thing about Watchmen is it is very, very 19, like there's a reason why that thing can only be made to, could have only been made back then, because it's very much a part of that decade.
And it's, they're not like doing a sequel that like takes place a couple years later. This is modern day. And it kind of fits the vibe of what's been going on lately here.
And you watch it and you can, like, I saw who I believe Jeremy Irons, who I believe is supposed to be Ozymandias. I saw a woman I believe is supposed to be the Silk Spectre. I think Night Owl also showed up there. There was also a shot of what looked like a pirate flag attached to a scythe, which I think is meaning we're probably going to see more Black Freight stuff. And, you know, just overall, very, very intriguing.
Yeah.
It's definitely a nice way to go with it, because I think at some point they realized, look, we can't really redo this. It's too much of its own time, and they already made the movie, Zack Snyder, you know, and it's like, what can we do? Well, what if we sort it as like a stepping off point? And
that makes sense.
Yeah. Especially also, Dave Gibbons, the artist, is actually involved as a creative consultant. So
I have to run into the situation like Game of Thrones has been, where you have the source material and then it never gets finished.
Yeah.
And so it's like, shit.
Yeah.
Where now they're doing like spinoffs, so that doesn't have to adhere to it at all. And that stuff's probably better than what's kind of going on with the series right now, as it finishes where, I guess they know what is supposed to be going on is from, you know, George R. R. Martin, but I think diverges from certain things from the book.
Yeah. Also, if you watched the teaser, you may have noticed the conspicuous absence of someone very important.
Hmm.
Yeah. Outer Manhattan.
Well, doesn't he leave, essentially?
Yeah, he does.
Hmm.
But he ain't going to be gone forever.
Well, HBO likes their dicks.
Hmm.
So
so he has to be there at some point.
Yeah.
So we're all going to get a big face, a big blue wing wong. Just
yeah. And they got a lot of good actors here.
Oh yeah.
Louis Gossett Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Yahya Abdul-Mateen.
Jeremy Irons, as I said earlier.
Don Johnson, Regina King. Andrew Howard, Tim Blake Nelson. There's a lot of good people here.
Yeah.
So at the very least, the cast has.
And I do love the idea
up there.
And I do love the whole idea of like Rorschach basically becoming the messianic figure for like a terrorist cell.
Yeah.
Because if you are familiar with Watchmen, Rorschach may have been a protagonist, but he is not a hero.
He is a conspiracy person.
He is a lunatic, is what he is.
He's a guy who's been shaped by some awful things.
Yeah, and as anybody who knows anything about Watchmen, he's also a bit of the subject of misaimed fandom. Didn't get the memo that, no, this guy is a fucking bloodthirsty nut job and you shouldn't want to emulate him. But, as we showed, not only do a bunch of people want to emulate him, but they are willingly arming themselves, going up into people's houses and shooting them in the middle of the night.
Yeah, look at Joker fandom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way people
weirdly enough, the alt-right is pretty much Rorschach. Right down to the faux Ayn Rand bullshit. Do I need to explain that? Okay, let me explain that. Rorschach is actually based on... Okay, so I guess a lot of people don't know this. Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons were originally doing Watchmen. What happened was that DC, because they had gone through like an acquisitions process, they had gotten a hold of a whole host of like Silver Age characters from, I think it was this company called Charlton Comics. And some of the characters that are now like DC stables, like for example, The Question and Blue Beetle, were originally all these. But the problem was that they decided, you know what, no, go and do something original. That's why most of the characters in Watchmen are somewhat tangentially related to characters from Charlton. So Rorschach is actually pretty heavily inspired by The Question. You know who created The Question?
Mm-hmm.
Steve Ditko.
Ooh.
The co-creator of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what else Ditko did? He created an independent comic called Mr. A, which is basically his version of a crime-fighting vigilante that is really hardcore into Ayn Rand and objectivism. And basically all the comics are objectivist screeds. And so Alan Moore decided to create the logical conclusion of what that character would be, and that's Rorschach.
Okay.
And Steve Ditko famously said, asked him, like, did he know about it? He's like, Rorschach, oh yeah, I know him. He's Mr. A, but he's insane. Anyway, all right, so I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Yep.
All right, so I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you would like to write in, have us a question, question, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We'll have it linked to you in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org. Pretty much any, you know, podcast aggregator or any place where you can download lovely little audio gems like ours and enjoy them deliciously with your ear mouths. That was a sentence I just said.
That was.
We're drunk.
Yeah. With that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo Ganalvo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Logie. Good night, sleep tight. Thank God we're not Australia.